I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. It's a bonus Tuesday episode, and we're live from Studio B on YouTube, breaking down all things AFC East and AFC North NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Studio B here, Sam.
How's all it true. All correct.
You ready to go?
Yes.
We're like right on top of each other here.
Yeah. Close.
It's cool, though. It's cool. It's a different view. Different set. This is where we were draft night, recording all those videos that you've seen on YouTube, I'm sure.
I mean, look, it's very difficult to put us both in an enclosed space and not have it look like either I'm a child or you're a giant, or both. Well, so that's what we're dealing with here.
That's what we're dealing with. This is why people think you're 5'3".
Yeah. That's, for some reason, that's the default assumption, right? It's not that you're 7 feet tall. It's that I'm 4 feet tall.
Yeah, you look small.
Why? I'm my regular bad. Height. You're not.
My bad. It's also,
that's the problem here.
It's warm in here. We got a couple hours. We got this, though. We're gonna crush it. We're talking all things AFC East and AFC North. Of course, we already did the NFC East and the NFC North. So go check that out from Monday. So this is the extra. We're doing this Tuesday show. Then we'll be here tomorrow, which is Wednesday, and, of course, Thursday. And we'll get through all the divisions, two divisions at a time. You ready to go?
Yep.
We don't have the beautiful Western and Southern placard here.
No, but we still have down there. Look, see, you can see it. The little Western Southern thing.
It is there. Let me pull up the things I want to say. Producer Tyler's on. He's crawling out of here.
That's nice.
He crawled so nobody would see him. Then I gave it away.
Hey, see, there it is.
There he goes. I gave it away by talking about him. So very professional. That's how we do it. The PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. Luckily, you've got first pick in selecting the right money moves. Do you need life insurance? What about health planning for your financial goals? Don't pass on this round. Use your position to expand. Don't trade down, is what they're saying here. Use your position to expand your financial education and learn more with information on life insurance, investing, and retirement planning. You do that at westernsouthern.com/draft. So that's different. westernsouthern.com/draft. We appreciate Western and Southern being a big part here of the PFF NFL podcast. All right, man, you ready to get into it?
Sure.
We're using our new friend, Rene Bugner. Bugner. He said I nailed it the other day, and I don't even remember how I said it, but
yeah,
I think it was close.
Whatever it was, probably wasn't that.
He's done more work, which means the type is now smaller and more difficult to read.
True.
In his tweet. But Rene has done a nice job pulling together
29 different evaluators.
29 different graders, and now our friend Thor Nystrom.
No longer the harshest.
Not the harshest. Because you got Evan Silver just in here. He's throwing Fs around, throwing Cs around. You know,
and then Silver actually doesn't have a single F on there.
Looks
somehow
like
he's been,
Thomas. Oh, it looks somehow, like Painter, but it's not.
Somehow Evan,
sideline reporter.
Somehow Evan has been the second harshest grader without a single F in there.
Oh, there's no Fs.
Nope.
Oh, it was Thor. That was the F I saw.
Just a lot of Cs. Everybody had a C, essentially, except a couple of teams.
A lot of Cs. Everyone's doing satisfactory work. Everyone's just getting by. Anyway, so we've got what we're looking at here is Renee's tweet on the GPA of the draft classes. So it's using PFF's grades and several other outlets and averaging them up. So we'll talk about PFF grades, and we'll also talk about the GPA of the various teams. First team up in the AFC East is the Buffalo Bills. So the Bills, where did they rank here? Another team, a big trade down team. They finished 12th from a GPA standpoint and a solid B+ from PFF.
Mm-hmm.
Kayer Elam is their first draft, their first pick, first round. They traded up to get him at 23 to fill that cornerback need. I think when Trent McDuffie went at 21 to the Kansas City Chiefs, I think the Bills said, that's it. Corner run, we don't want to miss out. I think they would have loved Trent McDuffie. But Elam, apparently their guy, to fill in to play opposite Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, and you know the other player that a lot of people gave them in mock drafts was Andrew Booth, who was falling due to injury concerns. And if he wasn't in the equation, essentially, then you're kind of left with Kyrie Elam, right? And I think it's a fair point that we brought up before, maybe somebody else mentioned, that we've been talking about how Derek Stingley Jr. should get a pass, essentially, because he showed incredible play in 2019 and then injuries and whatever, hasn't hit that level since. We say, look, it's more important to show that level than it is when you showed it. You can make the same argument for Kyrie Elam, that he, a couple of years ago, had a grade, coverage grade, basically 90, and then it's gone downhill ever since. But showing that is more important than showing it last year. And even last year, you know, you can find tape where he goes one-on-one with Jameson Williams in press man coverage and wins. Like, Jameson Williams got basically nothing against him in press man and really struggled on a couple of reps. So I can definitely see why the Bills would covet a guy like Kyrie Elam. And I think it gives them some flexibility on that defense as well, with Tre'Davious White already there, more of an off-coverage kind of corner, to have them mix it up a little bit on different sides. You know, maybe play press on the side with Kyrie Elam a little bit more off on the other side with Tre'Davious, and all of a sudden just have more flexibility within that defense.
I think Elam can play. Do you like him only in press? I think he can do it all.
I do.
I think he's not bad playing off.
I mean, he has very good ball skills. I don't like his...
He does have good ball skills. There are some similarities to C.J. Henderson as a prospect, I think. The regression from a production standpoint, the ball skills, a little bit hit or miss there. But I think the Bills, I think they get a good player. Was he the fourth corner off the board at this point, I believe?
Yeah,
because you had Sauce and Stingley up top. You had McDuffie at 21. Elam, the fourth corner off the board. We had him as the fifth corner. So I think the value was solid there, and certainly did fill a need for the Bills. I thought they might go Tyler Linderbaum there. Thought they might fill the backup center need that they had.
Starting. Yeah.
Backup center. And then they trade down a ton throughout the second round and go James Cook, the guy that you love as 80% of Dalvin Cook, a second round running back for the Bills. Usually, hatred from PFF here. I like to look at it from the angle of, okay, what's James Cook going to provide there? And look, I don't think your roster's ever set. You know me. You're never going to look at your roster and say, that's it, don't need any more good players. Just pick running backs. We're good here. The Bills are the closest, though, to being able to like kind of have that mentality. And I think the justification for a James Cook pick, again, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do the running back that high. I think the Bills have to I think they have to battle against, as Josh Allen gets more expensive, continuing to have cheaper starters. So they can't just draft luxuries and draft projects. But James Cook brings something completely different to this offense. That Devin Singletary, that Zach Moss. I know they brought in J.D. McKissick. But those guys, they got some explosive. I mean, Cook's got some explosiveness now to this offense that's really tough to defend.
They tried to bring in J.D. McKissick.
Oh, that didn't go through.
He reneged, remember? He bailed on it and went back to Washington.
Oh, that's why they got him then.
Right. So
he was on our depth chart as of a couple of days. He was throwing me off here. A
couple of days
ago. There was an updated. Yeah.
That's not great.
We'll fix that. It's fixed now. James Cook's the backup right behind Devin Singletary on the updated version.
It is funny. There was a little segment I was watching, and they threw on some James Cook highlights. You know, it's just part of the background noise, the way that works. It is silly how much like Dalvin Cook he is. It's just like he moves like Dalvin. You watch him run, you're like, that's Dalvin Cook. Okay, it might be 80% of Dalvin Cook in terms of size and potentially ability, but that's Dalvin Cook. So I maintain my stance all along that if you get 80% of Dalvin Cook, A, that's probably the best running back in any given draft. B, it's the best running back Buffalo has on the roster. I think he'll be a good addition to this offense.
I think there's elements to this. Remember how much they relied on Josh Allen in short yardage. Now, I'm not saying James Cook. I keep saying Cooks. I know it's Cook. Well, I was using the possessive. I'm not saying he's the third down guy, third and short. But I think the Bills want to have more options. So you don't have to rely on Josh Allen. Every time it's third and three, it's like, all right, QB sweep, QB power. I think maybe having more specific roles for their running backs, letting Devin Singletary or Zach Moss handle some more of the short yardage stuff. Being able to have James Cook out there in passing situations or on early downs to maybe just mix it up, right? And have, for me, the biggest thing is that explosiveness, right? And I'll say the same thing about Breece Hall and somewhat defend the Jets and say, look, here's the reasoning for the running back. And when you have other playmakers that you have to account for, when you have a good offensive line that's going to create some room, getting those guys into space, and I think the Bills have a good enough offensive line. They have all the receivers that you have to account for. And now, if Josh Allen just either hits a check down, they do like to do some gimmicky type stuff. They like to use the screen game. They like to use the jet sweeps and all that stuff. James Cook is just another weapon that they can use here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's there wasn't much else exciting here. Terrell Bernard, linebacker in the third round, a little bit higher than we would have had him on the board. Baylor linebacker. Khalil Shakir as a fifth round wide receiver, I think, is solid value there.
Guy and a lot of people liked in the draft.
Yeah, a lot of people liked him. I think he became – I know when we were looking at the receivers, which was actually – I didn't realize one of our most watched episodes when I went back, at least on YouTube. He was that guy that was probably in that 11 to 20 range. That's pretty wide. But right. In that 11 to 20 range among receivers, and it became a flavor thing. I thought he did some really nice red zone stuff at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, he's solid. You throw him into the mix, and he's competing for, what, wide receiver four snaps on this deep roster.
And a guy that could definitely contribute on this team. And then they drafted punt god.
They did.
Matt Araiza.
Who we didn't think was exactly – the NFL doesn't actually think is the god.
Neither did we. No. Really, the only people that thought he was punt god are the guys that watched him, like, just – hoof a ball 80 yards.
Yeah.
Didn't always go in the right direction, but 80 yards. It went a long way that way.
Yeah.
And even when you're like, even when they're pulling up the highlights, wow, look at this, drops this 80-yard punt inside the one. It's like, well, no, he didn't. He dropped it like 50 yards and then watched it bounce for another 30. Like, that's not a great punt. That's bad. That's bad punt fielding.
Yeah, just catch it.
Yeah. But having said that, I can't remember if it was the Combine or the Senior Bowl, wherever it was, somewhere not in a game situation, he was showing more punts that had a little bit more direction and actual control to them. But, I mean, look, it's a little bit like taking a toolsy quarterback, right? There aren't that many human beings with that kind of donkey leg that can just blast a ball 70 yards from one place to the other.
Yeah, groom them.
Yeah, I mean, look, it feels like it's easier to teach a little bit of direction and a little bit of control to the donkey leg than it is to teach a dude how to get the donkey leg in the first place.
Donkey leg.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Get him in the sixth round. The going rate for punters was the fourth.
Yeah, I mean, that's where Baltimore took one. Baltimore, who, by the way, claimed that they had a one-punter draft class. Like, they had one guy that they would draft, and they grabbed him in the fourth.
That's what happens when you use the model. You eliminate people.
What does the model say about the punt god?
I haven't run them through the model yet. Haven't run them through it yet.
Hmm.
I could.
Right. I mean,
but I have a feeling he's at the top three in this draft class.
There are people out there that claim we hate punters, and this is the kind of ammunition they need.
Why do we hate punters? I don't care about special teams, yeah.
It's comments like that.
I don't care. I kind of like Christian Benford, by the way, the other sixth round pick, Villanova, 90-plus coverage grade at the FCS level. And a lot of times, this happens to me a lot when I'm playing around with PFF Ultimate or even Premium Stats, right? Because we have all the FCS guys, Premium Stats, all part of your PFF Elite package. You go in and it's like, oh, here's this really nice grade. It's at the FCS level. What do you do? But you look at size, speed's decent and all that stuff. Christian Benford's a pretty decent player, zone player from Villanova, had 7 interceptions last year. So, again, as far as sixth round picks go, I'll take that. You'll come in and maybe even compete for snaps. Probably not with Kaiir Elam, but in a backup role. So thought that was solid by the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Solid B's, just a B class. I'm surprised they landed 12th overall.
Really? Isn't that kind of where that should be?
I mean, a B, I thought they'd be a little bit lower. I didn't think anything they did was crazy exciting. Running back in the second round. I'm just surprised across the board other people gave out A's and stuff like that. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, A's seems a little bit of a stretch, but B, I mean, 12th seems like about where you would put a team that's getting a B across the board. I mean, look, when you look at that run of grades, there's a couple A's in there. There's also a couple C's in there. Basically, everybody's giving them a B.
So B class.
Net-wise.
Overall for the Bills. Similar to last year. Last year was more of an upside play. This year, they've probably got more immediate contributors.
Has shaken out to almost exactly a B average GPA, right? That's what
it feels like.
3.0 is, I assume.
deep down. All right, let's go Miami Dolphins. What do you got on the Dolphins here? Dolphins didn't pick until 102.
Yes.
So harder to it's just harder to analyze this. Channing Tindall, the linebacker whose flashes, I mean, his flashes look like first-round player.
Yeah.
Size and speed and flying around the ball, just very inconsistent.
I mean, I think Renner was saying that this is the fastest linebacker. And that, like, forget 40 times, just in terms of when he sees it and goes, this is the guy that's going to get to where he's going, the fastest of any linebacker in this class. But we are dealing with flashes rather than consistent production or, you know, consistent anything. So, okay. This is what happens when you're picking in the mid rounds, right? Like, those are the kind of players you get. If he didn't have flaws, you'd be talking about him in the first round. But he does. So, you know, this is where we are.
Still our number 9 linebacker. I think it kind of shows how we're ranking linebackers, right? He's the 9th linebacker on our board out of 33. But 115th overall on our draft board. Goes 102nd. So I thought the value was fine there. Eric is Ezukanma from Texas Tech. Bigger receiver. Maybe adding some size to this receiving core that they don't really have now with Devontae Parker moving on. It's a speed receiving core. So he adds a little bit. I know you liked him a little bit, right? In the where was he in your receiver rankings of 35 players? Or whatever?
I don't remember. I've actually closed that spreadsheet down.
It was in the 20s or something.
I can't open it again. Or I can, but it will take a while.
What are you doing? Like I feel like just a massive spreadsheet blows up your computer.
No, yeah, I've got a million tabs open. So between those two things, it's...
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I shouldn't have done that.
No, you
shouldn't have done that. No. You should know off the top of your head, though, where you ranked them.
Yeah, I should, but I don't.
Cameron Good, Skylar Thompson. That's your draft class.
Skylar Thompson.
I'll take the shot on Skylar Thompson. He's got some good grades in his history.
Sure.
He does enough. I mean, as far as backup QBs go.
Skylar Thompson getting drafted ahead of Carson Strong, though. Pretty wild.
Yeah, Carson Strong. Did we mention that on the Eagles portion, that he did get a $300,000 guarantee as an undrafted free agent?
Which is about 10 times the standard rate for an undrafted free agent.
You'll hear this a lot, too, where former execs and just people analyzing the draft will be like, there is a point where players don't want to get drafted. There's a point around 6 or 7. This is me.
For precisely this reason.
This is why I wanted to get passed over 1,500 times.
Oh, well, well done. Congratulations.
Sign that undrafted Twice. Free agent deal. You know what I mean? 4,500 times total. Yeah. So
three times.
There is a point where the money's better in undrafted free agency, and Carson Strong cashed in as an undrafted free agent quarterback. When you looked at this draft class, you thought Carson Strong out of Nevada was going to be, he'd be the fourth round guy, right? All the other guys were going to go first two rounds.
I mean, it's significant as well. So for example, Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, right? Final pick of the draft, 7th round, 262. Brock Purdy is getting $80,000+ as a signing bonus. Carson Strong is getting $350,000.
$350,000. Impressive. By the way, the Dolphins finished 29th with a 2.22 GPA over here. One person gave him an F+. I thought that was harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Carson...
That was John McClain, the retiring Houston Chronicle beat writer.
Carson Strong is getting about 4 times the guaranteed money that Skylar Thompson is getting, despite one of them being drafted and the other one not.
Wow. Yeah, so at some point you just want to not get drafted. We gave the Dolphins a B-. That was one of our lowest grades there. Again, it's one of those teams that just gets hurt by... They didn't pick till 102, and most people doing draft grades don't really consider that.
They didn't pick until 102, and unlike a couple of other teams that had long waits until they picked, they didn't necessarily... They didn't necessarily match the pick with need. You know, like Miami's offensive line is still a concern. I kind of would have liked to see them spend that first pick on the offensive line.
I didn't know you're Mr. Need guy right now.
Only when it comes to, look, at some point, like my whole point has always been, if you put yourself in a position where you have to draft for need in the draft, you're not running things well, but that's the reality of the situation you put yourself in. You can't then go, well, to hell with it. We just won't have a wide receiver this year. Like, that's not an option. You've made mistakes in putting yourself in this position, but now you need to do something about it.
There's two other places right now that you can pick up players.
Who's the best available free agent receiver on the market?
You're just using receiver as an example?
Yes. Because, like, you're number 3.
I mean, the Dolphins don't need a receiver.
No, but, like, that's the world, right? Like, if you say, well, we just won't address this position because it doesn't match with value. Oh, we'll pick it up in free agency after.
Well, like, I think
it's not a good place to be picking up players.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a third rounder versus a retread free agent in the fifth wave of free agency? Is there any difference? If you're just talking about for this season? Because when you talk needs, you're only talking for this season. Most people. Is there really a difference between fifth wave of free agency and a third round pick? You're not expecting your third round pick to come in. Now, I do think the Rams play it really well, where they get these guys that are developmental guards and developmental safeties, and by year two and three, they're starting. And perhaps the Dolphins, given the investment that they made in Tyreek Hill and why they were in this situation, they could have invested that way and said, okay, we need a starter for next year, whatever it might be at certain positions. But the other places after training camp and or after the preseason, there is a wave of cuts at that point. There are tradable commodities after the draft as depth charts get saturated at certain positions, you can attack the overflow. So I don't think you panic and just fill needs. I do want to discuss, because I don't want to completely neglect the Dolphins here in general because they didn't pick. Where do you think the offensive line is? I'll read it out to you. You've got Teron Armstead and Connor Williams, left tackle and left guard. Those are the two big-name free agents that they brought in to solidify things. Now you have the rest of the guys that they've essentially drafted over the last 2 years, two or three years. You have Michael Dieter back at center. You have Austin Jackson, former first-round left tackle that's also played guard. He's heading into year three, could play right guard here. Robert Hunt, the playmaker, could also be back at guard. Now, he's still pretty good. He was their best lineman, you know, before you bring in Armstead and Connor Williams. Hunt can play tackle, could play guard. Solomon Kindley. You have Liam Eichenberg from last year. I think between all of that group, I think Hunt can be a good starter, right? I think you got 3/5 of your offensive line, and that feeling good about them at least. Now you're asking for Dieter and Austin Jackson, a Kindley, an Eichenberg. You need one of those guys at least to take a step forward, and then you can kind of deal with if you have below average play other than that. That's not bad.
And I think Robert Hunt is actually a better tackle than he is a guard. So if they are able to put him back at right tackle, I think that would be great for them and leave them with just trying to find two guys on the interior to patch up.
So this is where I'm saying, like, let's use this as an example. The Ode Abushi is still sitting out there. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm going to give him to every guard needy team because he's still sitting out there, and you have a better shot having him come in playing right guard at a solid clip for a year than, you know, drafting a guy in the third or fourth round and saying, hey, you're our guy.
Yeah, I mean, my only point is essentially the difference. You know, your ability to differentiate players diminishes the further down the draft you go. Right, so if you're picking at the top. Okay, there's a much bigger argument for not drafting for need because the difference between an elite player at one position that isn't a need and a not elite player to the next position that is a need could be significant. When you're in the third round and you've left yourself without a pick before, you know, 100 in, there's no difference between the linebacker and the guard and the edge rusher and the court. Like, just grab somebody that can actually fill a hole in the roster and make an impact. And there were still players around that could do that. Like, we were talking about what a great steal it was potentially for the Chargers, right? To, in the sixth round, get a guy like Sawyer who can come in and be their starting guard, maybe. Miami could have done that. He wouldn't have even needed to be starter, but suddenly he's in the mix, and you have him added to that group that you don't know if there's anybody coming from it yet that is going to be quality. So I'm not saying, you know, desperately draft for need at all times in all situations, but when you are in a spot like Miami, like the Raiders, like the 49ers, like the Rams, where you don't pick for a while because you traded away all your picks of consequence, I would like to see those picks spent on areas that have an obvious pathway to playing.
All right, that's fair. Anything else on the Dolphins here?
No.
Well, before we get in to the Jets and the Patriots, does your lawn have weeds, bare patches, or pet spots?
Yes.
Sunday can help you solve all these problems and more. The easy way, they've got everything you need from fertilizer to seeds to weed control, and it's all delivered right to your door. This is fantastic. This is our newest sponsor here. It's Sunday. Sunday can help you grow a beautiful lawn without the guesswork or the nasty chemicals. See, I like this. I get a little scared when I'm putting chemicals on my lawn because I, you know, sometimes trust that they're going to work, but I don't know about the chemicals in there. Sunday is the best of both worlds here. Their custom plans include fertilizer and everything you need to easily care for your lawn. You can feel good with kids or pets being around. You have both.
Yeah.
You have both.
Well, one of each.
One of each. Mm. Yeah. Just kids over here. Just the four kids. So I feel good with the kids playing around in this. Just attach the ready-to-use pouch to a garden hose and spray. It takes less than 15 minutes. That's good because I don't have a ton of time. And Sunday is offering our listeners 20% off. So your full season plan starts at just $129, and you get 20% off at checkout when you visit GetSunday.com/NFLPod. It's 20% off your custom plan at GetSunday.com/NFLPod. I was excited about this when I heard.
Yeah.
Get Sundays getting involved with us. You know, you have a lawn, I have a lawn, and, you know, my lawn needs some help.
And look, whatever about the kids, but the dog does damage to the lawn, you know? Turns out you let that thing out to pee all over the ground. Just immediate brown spot. So this will be great.
My three-year-old, same thing.
They're sending us out some stuff, and I can't wait to have it fix the lawn.
All right, let's get into the New England Patriots.
Oh.
The teachers didn't like this one. The grades. The grades are not kind to the New England Patriots. They're last in GPA, number 32 out of 32 in the rankings. There's a couple Fs in there. There's some Ds. Even PFF handed out a D. The Patriots.
A D. Yeah. We did. That's as harsh as we got.
All right. So why is this? Because you – nobody knows anything, Sam.
No.
We all know this. We all agree. Nobody knows anything. Wait 3 years until you tell me it's a D.
I mean
– but let's – we're great in the process, the players picked.
When other NFL head coaches are laughing at your first round draft pick, it's not good, you know? Now, Sean McVay had to like walk that back and apparently phoned up both the Patriots and Cole Strange to like apologize and insist it was no insult intended, you know? No offense intended, but we did think you would be around two rounds later, you know? And we thought that was funny.
So the Rams do exactly what you're saying. They have a guard need. I'm sure they spent a lot of their evaluation time on guards and corners. Those are the first two picks that they used, by the way. And they were like, who's going to be available?
Exactly.
Around pick 100. Cole Strange will be one of those guys.
We like him. He could be available then. No, the Patriots end up snagging him in the 20s of the draft. And look, so bottom line, he was a guy that was 86th on PFF's big board. He was 70-something on the consensus board, 76th. Patriots draft him at 29, and the Rams laughed at it, right? Now, okay, maybe there's some other people out there that thought he was a first rounder, but most people didn't. And that's kind of emblematic of this entire Patriots draft. Tyquan Thornton, they draft him at 50. He was number 192 on PFF's big board.
They traded up to get him.
Yeah, but even independent of the trades, right, they drafted dude almost 150 spots higher than his rank on the PFF big board.
But they traded up to get him. This is part of the point here, Sam. Like, Tyquan Thornton runs 4.28.
Yes.
No one else does that, right? I understand. I mean, at that point in the draft, the speed's gone. Tyquan Thornton's fast.
I mean, Calvin Austin runs 4.32.
Yeah, but he's bigger. Thornton's bigger than Calvin.
That's good.
Speed and speed score. Speed score's higher because of the weight.
Yeah.
A little bit. On the surface, the two big traits. He goes up and tries to catch the ball well, even with his tiny hands. And he runs super fast.
Dude's got
those are desirable traits. But he was still a third or fourth round prospect. For us, he was 192. He was our 25th ranked wide receiver. Even if we're off by 10 spots and he's only receiver 15, you traded up to get him at a spot where Sky Moore was on the board.
Yeah.
And Sky Moore, the Chiefs traded down from this very spot. And then got Sky Moore.
Having finally thrown a tape measure on my hand, like for the first time ever, to find out what it actually is, it really highlights how small Tyquan Thornton's hands are. Tyquan Thornton's
hands. You have bigger hands than him?
No, not quite. But it's only a quarter of an inch difference. Tyquan Thornton has a quarter of an inch hands bigger than mine, and I have really small hands. So that dude is working with a handicap here. Like, the difference between him catching a ball and a Larry Fitzgerald catching the ball is mind-blowing in terms of the extra surface area involved in making that catch. Calvin Austin is 5'7" and 170 pounds and has significantly larger hands than this guy. Like, that's
Calvin wins again.
Very, very Calvin. Unusual.
So I do want to say, I want to explain where these guys fit in with the Patriots. So I want to get into like the positive aspect of this and what they were thinking and why they did it and all that stuff. But I think we just have to further discuss parts of the process here, right? Bill Belichick did say, if you remember, the Patriots traded down from 21
yep.
to 29 to get Cole Strange. And, you know, they asked him at the press conference, and you usually get this answer from the coaches, even a Belichick, like, yeah, we would have taken him at 21, right?
Well, if that's true, thank God for the trade, because that would have been
even worse. Yeah, so at least they got extra picks so they could trade up for Tekuan Thornton later. but even if, you know, Cole Strange was going to be the Niners complimented Cole Strange. They were going to take Cole Strange, right? Yep. We got it on good authority that this one other team was going to take Cole Strange. And that's okay. Like, so you're sitting in the draft room, like, we love Cole Strange. He's the guy. We like him a lot. We got good information. The 49ers are going to take him between our pick, our next two picks. So we can't get him at 50, whatever. So we're going to have to get him now. So that's your thought process. Fine. You get your guy. I think the criticism of this entire thing is Cole Strange that good? Right? You trust your evaluations and all that stuff, but with the nerds would say is if your draft strategy is dictated by your confidence in your own evaluations, you're missing the point and you're ignoring a ton of historical precedent across other teams. I'll go back the other way. Now, the defense of the Patriots, I think they've done a really good job of evaluating offensive linemen. PFF didn't exist when they drafted Logan Mankins at the end of the first round, 2005, whenever that was, right? Nobody thought that was a good pick, whatever year that was. Nobody thought that was a good pick. Who? Logan Mankins? Ended up becoming a great Patriot, great player, and nobody was really laughing after the fact. Unless, of course, they could have gotten Logan Mankins a round later, then it's like, oh, you're leaving meat on the bone from a draft process standpoint. So if Cole Strange becomes Logan Mankins, nobody really cares that much. But I think the point is, if you're that confident in your evaluation that you have to get this guy, and we just can't let the Niners get this guy, because there's no one else in this draft that can come in and play left guard for the Patriots like Cole Strange can, I think you're leaving meat on the bone. And it's like, it's okay if you don't have Cole Strange.
I think the problem is less teams being overconfident in their evaluation relative to everybody else, which is usually how this is framed. It's how complete a picture can you build of where the rest of the NFL is on a particular player? Because the point Kyle Shanahan was making, which is a reasonable one, is, hey, look, you get these guys where, you know, the consensus or the general opinion or the draft community or whatever thinks, oh, this guy's a third rounder. But the NFL views this guy as, they look at the tape and they say, that's a first round tape. I don't care if he's from Chattanooga or whatever it is. That's a first rounder. It looks like a first rounder to me. He's a first round guy. So the point that you have been kind of making is that, hey, look, if it's the Patriots and the 49ers and against 30 other teams, you should look at that and say, we're on an island here. This is probably not smart, right? The wisdom of the crowds. 30 is a lot more than two. We should probably lean on the idea that 30 teams think this guy isn't as good as we do, and therefore we're probably wrong. But you're not going to, I mean, you don't have 31 other teams' draft boards, right? You make these phone calls and you all kind of fish for information and get what you can, and you might have a good idea where a few different teams rank this guy. How complete is that picture? If you've got, you know, four other teams almost exactly where they rank him, and you know the consensus board, is that enough for you to be confident that actually the rest of the league thinks this guy is two rounds worse than we do? We should probably back away from our evaluation. Or, you know what I mean? It's difficult, I think, to gauge exactly where you are in that whole landscape. And I think that's part of it a lot of the time, where just the unknown leads them to back themselves.
Yeah, but I think I agree. The other part of it is, again, they had to take Cole Strange at 29. That's what they believed, right? Where it's like, they filled needs here. The Patriots filled a need here. He's going to come in and probably start at left guard. That's going to be where he projects. They had a hole on the offensive line. But if you're playing the draft and you pick another player at 29 with hopes of maybe coming to get Cole Strange in the second round, you take any other player at 29 of first round value and you hope to get Cole Strange, and you don't, maybe you don't get him. What's the difference between Cole Strange and, say, third round pick Dylan Parham, who went to the Raiders, by the way, playing for Josh McDaniels in the same system? By our measure, Parham ranked higher on our draft board and had really solid grades at the FBS level. Strange played the FCS level fine. I'm not saying we're right or whatever. But the consensus had Dylan Parham as a better guard.
Right.
I mean, there is a pretty strong chance, just as strong of a chance that Cole Strange becomes a Pro Bowler, probably a better chance, that Dylan Parham's a better player, gotten two rounds later, and you could have had him and whatever other player you could have had at 29.
Sure. I mean, obviously the Patriots think that there is a big difference between Cole Strange and Dylan Parham. The issue is you can't – if you're an NFL team, you can't necessarily – well, actually, to be fair – the issue is they don't trust the consensus, right? Because they know immediately that, well, we differ massively from the consensus. Therefore, why would we use that as a check? What they're looking at is we need to know where everybody else in the NFL is on this player. And there's no way of knowing that. So the incompleteness of that information leads them to basically trust their own evaluation. The point that we've argued before is that actually, statistically, you would probably be better off just trusting the consensus board and then using your own ability to background check and research players to just start ticking names off and eliminate them from the consensus board, rather than trying to second guess the consensus board with superior evaluation on players. Just lean on that. And then
isn't that crazy though? Like
yeah. All
the time and effort that they put in NFL teams put literally thousands of man hours into the draft process.
But so does the consensus board, if you think about it. Like, that's the point.
They do.
The wisdom of the crowds creates a situation where there are hundreds of thousands of man hours going into a consensus draft board. It's just not the same way. It's just done through 58 different people.
But what I was going to say, though, too, is the Patriots and every other NFL team are doing it from spring practice, talking to coaches, interviews, psychology tests, plus, oh, by the way, the film and the measurables and all that other stuff. The consensus board is basically doing it, for the most part.
Almost 100% film.
Almost off of film and measurables. Things we can see.
Right.
There's no one-on-one interviews by, like, Bleacher Report, really, with the player to get into their... There's no psych test that we're giving them or anything.
Which is why I think you would be better off just using it. So the one that Arif Hassan uses, 82 different lists, right?
Yeah.
So 82 different lists times 300 players-ish on average. Like, that is an absolute ton of man hours put into that thing.
And nothing's perfect, but it's a pretty good indicator.
And each individual team is essentially saying, no, the work that we put in watching the tape is worth more than that list, right? Than the sum of that list. Whereas realistically, I still maintain you are better off saying the sheer sum of work gone into a consensus draft board, whether or not you respect each individual analyst, is worth more than the amount of time you're able to put into it when you consider that half your time is spent doing background information and character assessment and all that kind of stuff. So put all of your resources into that side of things.
I like your theory on
that. And just take somebody else's sum of actual football analysis.
So those are the two pieces I would say, right? You're going to take a player at 29 that consensus thinks is lower. So if you really like the player, you take your chances that you can get him lower. So there's overconfidence there in saying, I trust my board, I'm going to take him higher. But then the other part of overconfidence is that you're so confident that he's better than the next best guy. We cannot stand to get a Sawyer later on. We can't stand to get a Dylan Parham. We can't stand to get another guard. We have to get this guy right now. And I think that's where, I mean, Cole Strange could be a fine player. Plays hard. He's aggressive. He finishes. He's very athletic. He's in line with Joe Tooney and Logan Mankins as far as athleticism goes and all of that. I just don't think the process was sound. And I think, you know, this is part of the fun discussion, like what goes into that stuff. The thing I do respect about the Patriots, and I think why they trade down so much and then they pick their spots to trade up, they clearly tier things. I think a lot of teams do this, but they tier things, right? And they say, this is our last guy that we would take in this range, 29 to 35, whatever that looks like, right? This is the last guy that we would take in that range. What did you do here? What is this? Oh, Manscaped, liking your tweets, huh? That's great. And then they just say, this is the last guy, and we're going to take him. And I'm sure Thornton was like the last guy that they would have taken around 50, and they just had to go up and get him, and that's how they did it. I want to discuss what they bring to the team a little bit and what they're thinking, right? They wanted to fill the spot at left guard. Do you have that? Thornton brings speed.
A lot of it.
To one of the slowest offenses
really
in the NFL.
Really teeny hands.
Tiny hands. But one of the slowest offenses in the NFL. It's an interesting group of playmakers because Patriots fans were looking for a wide receiver one all offseason. What do you do with Mac Jones? What do you think of this group, though? You add Devontae Parker. Jacoby Myers is a pretty good two slash possession guy. Kendrick Bourne had a fantastic season last year. Nelson Agholor is still there for now. See if he lasts. Tyquan Thornton brings 4.28 speed. And then you have Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith as the two tight ends that they brought in last year. Jonnu was a disappointment. Hunter Henry's good, though. He's a very good tight end. And then the Patriots also drafted two running backs, which is a whole different story because it's not like they're in need of running backs.
No.
But they stuck to the board. I think it's a pretty good group of playmakers without stars. It's not bad.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I mean, I wrote a piece today about, you know, the essentially ranking the situations for the second-year quarterbacks, right? Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Lawrence, Davis Mills, Justin Fields. And when you look at the situation around Mac Jones, it's pretty solid now, right? The receivers are reasonable. The offensive line should be reasonable. The coaching is reasonable, albeit weird because they don't have an offensive coordinator, technically. So, they've done a decent job over the last few years of going from what was effectively the worst wide receiver core in the NFL to a decent group of pass catchers now.
Yeah, so it's not bad. And then you the two running backs that they add, you got Pierre Strong and then Kevin Harris from South Carolina. Pierre Strong's fast, man.
Yeah.
He's one of those get him to the second level, straight line speed. He's got some big play ability. Damian Harris is a really good running back. Ramondre Stevenson was fantastic as a rookie in what he did. It's a deep running back room. So they're deep at running back. I think they're deep, not great at receiver. They're deep at tight end just because they have two. So I'd say the depth of this offense, if that's what they were going for, they've done a good job of that in New England.
Yeah, they have. They've rebuilt that thing pretty well. This whole draft, though, was either taking players at positions that are strange and not real needs or fairly significant reaches.
Plus the awesome Marcus Jones.
Yes, which is the only thing, basically, that I like about this draft. Love Marcus Jones. I love it even more when you hear people start to talk about maybe they use him on offense. Maybe you get some gimmick plays.
Was it Lance that said Lance?
Yeah.
When he played on offense.
I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, Marcus Jones, not a lot of people move as efficiently as him. Move well.
The only person that does is Calvin Austin. When you watch, so they played each other a couple of times, actually, in the last couple of years. When you watch those two play, it reminded me a lot of the lowest divisions in MMA, right? The weight-wise, the featherweights and the bantamweights, the guys are 125, 135 pounds. When you watch those guys, I mean, what are you, Steve? What are you checking in at right now?
280-ish.
Okay. Yeah. So one of those guys, literally half your weight, right?
Like 140.
When you generally have played athletic things against small people that size, how freaking fast do they move?
They're fast.
Really fast.
All faster than I am.
Yeah. So when you watch those guys in an MMA fight and they're all 125 pounds, the freaking speed that they're able to move at, it looks absurd. It's ridiculous. Like, I'm not a large person, but neither am I small. So when you watch a guy like that, you're like, that speed I can't even comprehend. And I relied on speed when I was playing sports, right? Like, I was a fast person, but that's a level of quickness. It's just on a different world. When you watch Marcus Jones go up against Calvin Austin one-on-one, it looked like the tape was sped up. It's like somebody's running this at 120%, and it's madness. And Marcus Jones is the only guy that you ever saw that was able to match Calvin Austin for that speed and quickness. Like, the reason Calvin Austin was so intriguing is because he goes to the Senior Bowl, and there's an entire week of DBs not being able to work out how to deal with that, right? You couldn't press him because he'll make you miss inside a yard and you're grasping an air and he's gone. And you couldn't play off because he would just beat you with the break and do the same thing. Marcus Jones could line up one-on-one with him and match him for every lightning quick 125-pound move that he made. And so you literally, there's one guy that can do that. And that is tailor-made to play cornerback in the slot where you have the problem of a two-way go, right? Where a guy can go inside of you or outside of you, and the only way you know what's happening is by reading him, which means you're automatically reacting late to whatever's happening.
Right.
He's got the quickness to make up for that, and most people don't.
Is the Marcus Jones pick in the third round at 85 overall? You don't go into the draft like specifically thinking this, but is this a pick to cover Tyreek Hill? In your division, Tyreek Hill, you got to play him twice a year. Belichick has had a ton of success. He had a ton of success, not against the Chiefs necessarily, but against Mahomes and kind of making Mahomes uncomfortable from a grading standpoint. But they've done stuff with, covering Tyreek Hill one-on-one. Who did they have on him a couple years ago? The Jonathan Jones, another fast slot who's not as fast and quick as Marcus Jones. I wonder if this is a Tyreek Hill type of move here. But you made the point. If Marcus Jones, who's 5'8", 177, if he was 5'10", he's like Jair Alexander, first rounder, right? If he's 5'10", that's how good he is at straight up covering. Being in the hip pocket of the receiver, he just loses at the catch point because of a lack of play strength there, any slight. So I love the Marcus Jones pick there for Belichick and the Patriots. Also a dynamic returner, so you're going to see him maybe be the next great returner in New England.
And maybe play
offense. And maybe even play some offense. So that was our favorite pick there. Bailey Zappe goes in the fourth round.
Ahead of Sam Howell.
They just like the way he runs the offense and wins.
We do get to use his nickname now, though. The emailer. Oh, damn it. Who's that? Let me find his email.
It's time to move on to the Jets, though, as you look up Bailey Zappe's new nickname.
Well, we know what the nickname is. The nickname was...
You're trying to credit it.
Yes. So somebody... I suggested that he reminded me of, a thick Case Keenum. And somebody...
So you said thick Case Keenum and you have a fat Josh Allen in this draft.
I mean, look, I can't be held responsible
just be
for the
thick Josh Allen.
There are some chunky quarterbacks in this draft. It's not my fault. Adam
one
Reeves.
One thick and one fat.
Adam Reeves suggests that Bailey Zappe's nickname should be Queso Keenum.
Queso.
Which is frankly genius. And we should
there you go.
Immediately adopt that.
Bailey Zappe coming in to compete with Mac Jones.
Stop.
Just saying that the New England...
It is unusual, though. There aren't typically... That doesn't generally happen. You grab a quarterback and then the next year grab another one.
Well, Brian Hoyer's not getting any younger as the backup.
I mean, not a premium position, but the fourth round is not nothing.
All right, let's go on to the New York Jets. Second best as far as team GPA goes. A- from PFF. What a D by the forecast, guys. What'd they give them? Something bad.
I mean, judging by the George rant that I saw on Twitter, they didn't get a good grade. That's all I know.
So most people who looked at the Jets draft liked the players that they drafted and looked at that and said, good draft. There are analytics people out there that did not like their process because they traded up multiple times, traded up to get Jermaine Johnson in the first round, traded up to get running back Breece Hall in the second. I understand both viewpoints. I want your initial thoughts, and I'll tell you where I stand as far as the Jets go.
Okay, well, the Jets didn't have a bad draft based on the first round alone. If they had set fire to every one of their draft picks and just gone home, left the building, and not drafted again, they would still have a reasonable grade because they came away with three players, each of whom, A, will make an impact for them, B, was one of the top players on their board, and C, I saw all three of those guys at one point mocked to the Jets at number four overall. They got all three of them in the first round.
Yep.
So that, on its own, is immediately good. They got what was probably the number one corner and wide receiver on their board, and then an edge rusher that they reportedly loved and were proven to love. So I think that's fantastic. The fact that they had to trade into the first round again to get Jermaine Johnson, who cares? I think that's fine. It wasn't a massive, blockbusting move. It was a move that moved them up, and they got him. I think that's absolutely... They had one of the best first rounds of the entire draft.
Yeah, I think it was fantastic.
Yeah, then the question is just how much do you want to ding them for drafting Breece Hall in the top of the second? And I don't hate it that much. I really don't. I don't think the Jets roster is terrible, and I think at that spot, they drafted a guy that legitimately comes in immediate starter and upgrades massively a certain position. And look, so right now everybody is focusing on all these Shanahan teams who are, by the way, all doing the same thing, right? They're all drafting running backs high and everyone is saying the same thing. Well, the Shanahans of all people should understand that you do not need to go hunting for a high round running back because look at what happens. It's the undrafted free agent that tears. Well, okay, true, right? That is a fact that right now, there is a trend of those offenses, the guy that costs less resources to attain is outperforming the guy with bigger resources. But the fact that every one of those offenses, for a while now, has been going after running backs pretty high, should at least cause you to ask the question, what am I missing? Right? Fair?
They have a type. I think they have a type. They target that type. Doesn't mean that the highest round ones always work out.
And I'm not saying...
But Elijah Mitchell in the fifth round last year for the Niners was a type that they targeted. They got him later. But clearly, you got to have the one cut downhill guy.
And I'm not saying they're right to be doing this, but again, like the fact that it's happening all the time should at least cause you to question, what am I not seeing, right? Why is every one of these teams going after a running back in the second round or higher when they shouldn't be based off the information that we have? I honestly think a big part of it is size and durability. They want the Elijah Mitchell, but they want him in a tank body, right? And you tend to get that in the first or second round because everyone else is looking for one of those guys as well, right? So Breece Hall, 5'11", 217 pounds, and then ran really well at the combine. He has the sort of size and athletic package that you want to put that style of running back into. So for the Jets to go after him, okay, you can argue the value, you can argue the opportunity cost, and maybe they could have gone for another wide receiver or whatever it is. I honestly don't hate bringing Breece Hall in at that spot. And if that's the one problem you have with this draft, then they had a really good draft.
Yeah, there probably are. I mean, look, I think the Jets roster is in a weird spot because you said it's not that bad, right? And I agree. Like when you look at the roster and you look at the depth chart and it's like, wow, they've got two starting tight ends and they just drafted one. The offensive line's way better than it was. And the defensive line is far better. Like everything's far better than it was 2 years ago. Yeah. Let's just say that. And 2 years ago, you would say the offensive line, you're starting from scratch. The secondary, you're starting from scratch. And now it's looking pretty good. This reminds me a little bit of the Jaguars a couple years ago. Remember, they kept drafting high. And it got to the point where when you looked at the depth chart, it's like, there's really no holes here. I don't know that they're going to be great, but there's really no holes here. The question's going to be the quarterback, right? If you drop a great quarterback on this roster, they're really good. If you have a Blake Bortles, it's going to be hit or miss. So Zach Wilson's still the biggest question mark, right?
Of course.
He's good, they're good. If he's not good, it doesn't matter what the roster looks like. They're not going to be that good. But I think you could honestly look at this roster and say, if Breece Hall's the fourth player that you're bringing in this particular draft, which he was, even in the second round,
yes,
and is a speed home run threat in the Shanahan system where you trust that you've got the offensive line that's good enough, you're going to block it up, and you're going to create these opportunities in space, I understand it, right? You have a home run hitter now at running back to go with all of the playmakers that you've added, including Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, right? If you want to argue the opportunity cost, what you're essentially arguing is that they should double dip somewhere, right? You don't know that you fix wide receiver by drafting Garrett Wilson, so grab George Pickens as well. You don't know that you fix edge rusher by Jermaine Johnson, so grab, you know, whoever was still around, Arnold Ebiketie or whoever was still there at the top of the second. You don't know that you fixed any cornerback by grabbing Sauce Gardner, so grab another quarterback, right? Fine, you could do that, and if they had done that, I wouldn't argue. We've talked before about how double dipping is not a bad strategy.
Katie would have made this thing sweet.
Of course, yeah. But I don't think that you can see why they didn't. You know what I mean? Like, we've already done this. We have a player to fit this roster. If they both pan out, we're overburdened with players at that position. Because remember, Carl Lawson is supposed to be coming back. That's a big money signing in free agency that they're expecting to have this year. Even if you would look at it and say, well, pretty major injury. I don't know if you can bank on him being the same guy. They're going to. They paid him a ton of money. John Franklin Myers, a really good defensive lineman. They've got some players if Jermaine Johnson is the guy they think he is. So I don't think it's necessarily fair to expect them to assume that one of the picks they just made is going to suck. Therefore, they shouldn't draft the running back.
Here's what I loved about the Jets draft. There were some mocks, and maybe my expectations are going against the mock drafts that I hated. There were some mock drafts that had them taken, say, Ike Ekwonu at 4, and then Jermaine Johnson at 10. And as much as we preach perimeter, win on the perimeter, receivers and corners, and build back to front and all that stuff, and we got a lot of pushback from Jets fans. They will never take a corner over an edge. They believe in pass rushers. That's how they're going to build. I bought into it. You're right. Maybe they're not going to take corners. Maybe I shied away from taking Derek Stingley in certain mock drafts because Jets fans assured me they were taking an edge defender.
Yeah.
They loved Jermaine Johnson. I just love the fact that they came away with a cornerback who easily could be the best corner in this draft and the receiver that you and I had number one at receiver, but like literally the top players on their board. I listened to Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh. I listened to their press conferences too, and they said, we trusted our board.
Yeah.
They literally said, we trusted our board. And I didn't go back and re-listen. But I think they said that they had Jermaine Johnson in their top 8. And I think that's why they made the move. I think they said we had three top eight players.
They said they were, they would have, he was absolutely in the running at number 10 overall if the board hadn't fallen in the way that it fell, where they got Sauce and then Garrett Wilson.
But they trusted the board, which means they had Sauce Gardner that high, right?
Yeah.
And to take him at four.
They were saying
he was their second or third best player in the draft.
There was a report, I forget whether it was Burt Breer or Peter King. It was one of those, you know, MMQB slash the artist formerly known as MMQB articles, that essentially said as soon as they made the Garrett Wilson pick, you know, Joe Douglas nudged Robert Saleh or the other way around, and they were like, if Jermaine starts to slide, let's go get him.
Joe Douglas said at about 16, they started thinking.
Well, that's when they started making the calls. But
yeah,
he said literally when they made the pick.
Oh, right when they made the pick at 10.
He nudged him. You know, was like, if he starts to slide, let's go get him. So that's how they approach this.
So I think the Jets, when you look at their overall team building strategy, there are similarities to what the Bills did, okay, that we loved that they did with Josh Allen, which was get the offensive line to a reasonable spot, start adding some pieces at receiver. The Bills already had a really good defense, but from an offensive standpoint, they got the offensive line in a good spot. Jets are much better on the offensive line.
Yeah.
I think everything they've done from a team building standpoint, though, has essentially put – they still had questions at receiver, questions in the secondary especially. They waited on the secondary. So I love that they came away with Sauce Gardner, and I love that they came away with Garrett Wilson. And then at that point, when you have a guy that you did consider a 10, right or wrong – getting him at 26 and trading up to get him, I think they're thrilled.
And look, there's a couple of other things that fall in their favor as well. You look lower down the draft, they bring in a guy like Max Mitchell, who is an offensive lineman who had insanely good grades and is working from sort of physical limitations, right?
A great scheme fit. Who could legitimately play right tackle.
Great scheme fit and a great gamble to take in the fourth round, right? A guy with proven quality play under his belt, and you just don't know yet if that's going to work at the next level. But a perfect kind of roll the dice in the fourth round. And then another thing that's kind of with the analytics bent is they didn't pick after the fourth round, right? So the picks they got rid of were the ones that the data would say are the most inconsequential, right? You are the strike rate in fifth, sixth, seventh round is terrible. So they use those to maneuver for the picks that are going to make the biggest difference to this team. And really the only thing you can quibble with is the Breece Hall thing, which I think is fine. Like, okay, I understand an opportunity cost argument. I don't think it's so much that you criticize everything else they did. And I also think they deserve credit. Again, I use this phrase all the time the last show. Give them credit for making the layup, right? Yes, the board fell in a way that was advantageous to the Jets, but they still could have screwed it up, right? It would have been easy to take somebody ridiculous at those picks, and they didn't. They got players that should fit and work. Let's roll with that.
So I know the Jets traded in to the first round, but they had three first-round picks. Let's just quickly compare this to what the Raiders did a couple of years ago.
Ooh.
Where they came out of the first round with Cleveland Farrell.
I've been resisting the urge to dig up the tweet that I made at the time, which people gave me crap for. But I said something along the lines of, this is a franchise-defining draft for the Raiders. It's just a shame what it's defining.
Yeah.
And there were all kinds of people. Like, oh, PFF knows better than the NFL, huh? I got all kinds of crap for that.
In that case, yes.
And now, none of those guys, fifth-year option, picked up, right? Yeah. They basically called every one of them a mistake. And I've been disciplined. I haven't pulled it back up and been like, oh, what do you think now, Jeff, Raiders fans?
If I had our colleague George in the room, here's what I would say before he goes on to his rant. At the very least, George and Eric generally lean on the edicts that we don't know how to evaluate players, right? We lean on the consensus, lean on value positions.
Mm-hmm.
George and Eric and whoever else might be criticizing the Jets draft should at least be saying, you went corner receiver. At the very least, you went corner receiver, right? And you're coming out of this draft, even if you know nothing, you drafted a consensus top corner and a consensus top receiver and a consensus top four edge defender, three value positions that are difficult to get. You got those three compared to the Raiders a couple years ago where they got an edge, but he was the fifth edge on most boards, Cleveland Farrell. They got a box safety in Jonathan Abram, and they got a running back who's really good, Josh Jacobs, but he's a running back, and none of those guys had their fifth-year option pick. Did you pull it up?
I did.
You pulled up the Raiders. Can you save it for the Raiders?
So what's actually interesting about that is that the guy that gave me the most crap about that, turns out every one of the tweets in the thread, this tweet was deleted by the tweet author.
Oh, really?
He's been back and purged any
like
evidence.
The day before the draft, they announced they weren't picking up their fifth-year options.
Yeah.
He went
so
back.
That guy is, has eliminated any evidence that he was involved in the dumb side of that
is
argument.
Is he like one of those 200-follower people, or is he...
I don't even know who it is. It's just the tweet is deleted by the author. I can't
Not that there's anything wrong with having 200 followers. Just saying. Anyway, I like the Jets draft for various reasons. I understand if you're saying the process could have been better. One other thing I'll add, because we're going to get to the Baltimore Ravens next, without giving away too much, the Jets put some resources into their analytics, much like the Ravens do.
Yeah.
And the fourth round thing, I think, was very specific in this draft.
And again,
the Jets are very...
They should get credit for that.
Analytically sound. Now, how much... I just know that I know the teams. Like, I know the teams that work behind the scenes. I don't know how much gets flown up the, you know, mm-hmm. to the top, to Joe Douglas or whatever. I just know that they're smart.
These are all reasons for not hating on this draft, right? I you know, there are a lot of opinions out there on this particular draft, and I think anything other than good is massively stretching a point.
All right, let's go on to the Baltimore Ravens.
So does everybody else. They had the second highest grade on that overall GPA thing.
Yeah, I mean, we know that that's skewed by, like, if you're going to pick 4 and 10, chances are people are going to like you more than they don't like you.
Yeah, but again, like, you have to give them credit for making those layups.
Ravens are next. Did they have the best one? Yeah, they were number one. 3.97 GPA. Let's see. Even Thor gave them an A+.
Even Thor
liked their process. The worst grade was Rickelson and Truscott again. Those guys keep coming up over at DK Nation. They only gave him a B. Only a B for the Ravens in this one. Even Evan Silva, B+. That was the best grade he gave out. No, he had a couple A- in there. Eagles and Lions. So I thought the Ravens were fantastic. We've broken this down quite
yes.
a bit. But Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum, I think the way that they got there. The one thing, and this is there's some bias here too. Nobody's accounting for them losing Marquise Brown, I don't think. That is a thing, right? You did lose Marquise Brown, who's a good player.
Yeah.
Even though I am all on board, I think the overall process of that, I feel like I'm repeating myself for the 900th time, but it could be the first time you're hearing it. If to draft a player in the first round, get 3 years out of him, and then flip him for an equivalent first-round pick is great business. You do that every single time.
Yeah, but also it's even better for Baltimore because what has subsequently come out is essentially, you know, this was Brown instigating, right? Brown
right.
wanted out. He was tired of this offense that doesn't suit him, according to him, is run heavy, doesn't have as many big play opportunities, and a guy whose contract is going to be coming up at some point, you're going to have to pay a ton of money if you want to keep him around. So when that is brought to the table, for Baltimore to get a first-round pick for that, is great business. And maybe that was motivated by this 6-game suspension for PEDs that's come down the pipe for DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe, you know, that's why Arizona was willing.
More desperate there.
Yeah.
Arizona.
So yeah, they've lost Marquise Brown. On the other hand, when that was sort of instigated by the player, I think that's a great job to get that kind of value for him.
Yeah. But overall, I think it's the second straight year when the Ravens made the Orlando Brown trade. They drafted him a third round. They got 3 years out of him. They traded him for a first. So they upgraded and got a better pick. I'm just saying, if they keep doing that, you're going to have extra. Like, so because they did that with two players who were eventually going to make a ton of money, let's pretend Brown was ready to stick around. Because they did that, they picked up an extra Odafe Owe and they picked up an extra Tyler Linderbaum. You picked up two starters. And I don't think it's even about getting superstars. We talk about the value of starters. Having an average to above-average starter in the NFL, Owe probably looks like he'll be an above-average starter at some point. Linderbaum, I absolutely think, could be an above-average starter. I just think it's great business for the Ravens. The other thing is, because we always remember the haters, Sam. You always got to call out the haters. The haters are all over you with your Jets mock drafts. They'll never draft a corner. Never at 4. The Ravens will never draft Tyler Linderbaum, they assured me. I was assured that
not
he was
a good
way
scheme
too short.
Fit.
So I've never been wrong before, so I'm going to take this advantage to remind people that I was right about the Tyler Linderbaum thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, we loved, obviously, the first round. We talked about that on the reaction podcast of the first round and how the thing that I love the most is that, again, one of these smart, analytically driven, intelligent, edge-grabbing franchises understood that at some point, positions that don't have a lot of value become valuable if you get them at the right spots, particularly when the players are as good as Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum. So for the Ravens to get those two guys in the first round, love, absolutely phenomenal. Then you get to this, the interesting element of this draft, which is, so they're the team that jumps on David Ojabo in the second round, right? Guy, first round edge rusher who blew out his Achilles at his pro day, is going to have some form of, you know, red shirt type of rookie season. But you're getting a first round talent in the second round.
That's some juice off the edge with Ojabo and Odafe.
Of course. So it's this really smart mix of calculated risks, David Ojabo, massively certain things in terms of like Tyler Linderbaum, Travis Jones in the third. And so it kind of bounces back and forth. The diversifying the portfolio idea, right?
Yeah.
Let's split these bets between gambles, between sure things, and somewhere the mix of this is going to end up coming out better than everybody else. So I love them grabbing Ojabo. I think that's a great risk to take in the second round. Travis Jones in the third, when people were talking about him as maybe sneaking into the bottom of the first round, phenomenal value. And even if it wasn't, Baltimore being the team to grab him, I think is so huge. I mean, they have an extensive track record of Travis Jones-shaped humans doing good things for them. Brandon Williams, Michael Pierce, these guys that don't look like they should belong in today's pass-happy, smaller, quicker moving NFL, the Ravens are able to plug those guys in the middle and get more out of them than just being a one-dimensional run stuffer. So Travis Jones landing in Baltimore, not only is it great value for them, but it's like the perfect landing spot for him. So he gets to maximize what he can do. In the fourth round, they grab Daniel Faalele, the monster Minnesota tackle.
And five other players.
Of course. But him to start with.
Yeah.
They're going to try and replicate what they did with Orlando Brown, right? Now, it's not the same. Orlando Brown was a much better college player than Faalele, but the same in terms of man-mountain of a human that had terrible measurables, right? They're going to try and see if that matters this time. And as you said, yeah, multiple fourth-round picks. They had a corner, tight end, the one punter draft class. They grabbed the one punter they thought was worth drafting in this draft class.
Starter, even. A couple points I wanted to make here. On the Travis Jones thing, just to compare this back to like that Patriots decision, right? Remember, the Ravens got leapfrogged by the Eagles. The Eagles jump up to 13 to get Jordan Davis, who everybody... Jordan Davis? Yeah.
Hmm?
Big dude from Georgia.
Yeah. Jordan Davis.
Yeah. I just... Don't worry about it. Brain went crazy for a minute there, getting old. So Jordan Davis, who a lot of people pegged as a Raven, right? And if you laid this out for the Ravens, let's say they would have picked him at 14 or whatever it is.
Yep.
Fine. Would the Ravens rather trade up to 12 to, you know, come back and leapfrog the Eagles? Do they wish that they had gotten Jordan Davis? Because he's just so good. He's just so planet theory. He's so great. We have to have him.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas what actually happened was, so they get leapfrogged, they miss out, and let's say that they love this elite player. Instead, they get Kyle Hamilton, another elite player at a different position. And then in round three, get Travis Jones at the same position as Jordan Davis. And you say, okay, even if you think Jordan Davis is the second coming of Vince Wilfork or whoever, the difference between Jordan Davis and Travis Jones probably isn't that big.
It's not two rounds.
Right? It's not two rounds big. And Travis Jones can go out there and be a productive player. Plus, you also have Kyle Hamilton. So that's like what we're talking about as far as the risk of trading up or the risk of coveting one player, as great as they appear. The risk of that. Now, Travis Jones could be terrible, and Jordan Davis could be a Hall of Famer, right? That actually could be a thing. But over time, I think those decisions, and it wasn't even a decision, right?
It doesn't sound like Baltimore was in love with Jordan Davis, as everybody assumed was the case, and Philadelphia might have assumed was the case, you know, which is part maybe why they made that trade. It's always difficult to tell post-draft what is true and what isn't. You know, the world tends to treat everything as true. Oh, well, they said they didn't love him. You know, therefore they didn't. It's like, yeah. Well,
did they say they didn't love Jordan Davis?
I think there have been, something came out that essentially made it sound like they weren't as in love with Jordan Davis as everybody else assumed. But like,
I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, but whatever. I'm just saying that right now, there tends to be the assumption that everything we hear in the aftermath of the draft is 100% true in fact, even though we've just spent 2 months listening to almost the exact opposite, right?
Yeah.
That thing I sent you yesterday, like, there's a quote from Mike Vrabel It was 21 days ago where he said, A.J. Brown is not in the trade block as long as I'm the head coach. 21 days later, the man's traded.
I think that's why
out of the building.
You and I get chippy at times because fans throw those quotes at us.
Yeah.
Like, you idiots, you didn't hear the coach's press conference? Like, I remind, like, somebody, we criticized the Seahawks three techniques one time. They need a pass rusher. It was like Pete Carroll just gave him the vote of confidence. Pete Carroll loves this guy. Like, he was cut within 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, look,
I remember all those things.
We're not going to get sidetracked by this too much, but
Sorry. The
Bears fans were all up in my mentions yesterday because I essentially reiterated on Twitter that...
Oh, they all agree with me, by the way.
I know.
Yeah.
The point that I was making on the podcast, which is that the Bears don't have faith in Justin Fields. And they were all like, nah, Ryan Poles said he did. Ryan Poles said, that's our quarterback. I watch film with him. I talk to him. Why would he do that? Like, okay, hang on. Just for a second, imagine...
My argument's better, though, right?
Yes. Just for a second, imagine that what I'm saying is true and that they don't have tremendous faith in Justin Fields being the future and taking them forward. Why would they say that out loud, right? How does that benefit them in any way, shape, or form to give voice to that lack of faith? Even if it was true, he would be doing exactly what he's doing right now, which is saying, this is my quarterback right now. It only serves me to maximize his chances of proving me wrong. So let's roll with that. Rather than, I mean, look, I'm stuck with this jackass right now, but, you know, what am I going to do?
I guess we'll make do with this Fields character.
So, like, you have to think for yourselves, people.
If my point is true, which is that they still believe in Justin Fields, or they could still believe in Justin Fields, and they also just want to play the draft, which is trust the draft board, don't reach, fill positions of value, and they drafted two defensive players. That's how the board fell. That can also be true.
Yeah. I mean, look, people, I'm just saying,
it's actually more likely.
People have lost the ability to think for themselves, right? And to evaluate sources, which is a pretty important thing in the world. Well, never been more important.
Everybody's flipping out right now because Tannehill said he didn't want a mentor. He's not here to mentor Malik Willis, which is literally the truth.
Look,
like, my job isn't to mentor you, Sam. I'm not going to drag you along. I'm getting paid to do my job. I'm not going to drag you along with me. If you learn some things from me along the way, good for you. You should. But it's not my job.
Simply refer you to the great Kurt Warner, friend of the show, who tweeted earlier, quote, I'll never understand the I'm not here to mentor the next guy mentality. So for all you young quarterbacks that need a mentor, DM me and I'll be that guy. Happy to help any way I can. So you,
Kurt, friend
and
of the
Ryan
show,
Tannehill,
runs a business,
might be selfish douchebags, but Kurt is out there to be as helpful
as he can. All right, Mr. No Nuance. He's not there. He's not being paid $30 million by the Tennessee Titans to be a mentor. You're the one who says, well, if you're a good mentor, become a coach, save the team some money. He's there to be the quarterback of the Titans. And if Malik learned some things along the way, good for him.
Jason Kelsey's out there excited to mentor the next guy.
Because he knows he's getting old and losing a step. And he's a nicer guy.
Yeah.
One last point here. I want to there was a question in the chat, and the Tyler Linderbaum scheme fit for the Ravens. I've made this point before. I want to reiterate it. They run a lot of gap scheme, and everybody and their mother said, Tyler Linderbaum, a perfect zone blocking center, which is true. And the differences in those schemes, when you're a zone blocking center, you're going to you have to be quicker and faster, and you're going to reach block, and you're essentially being relied upon to make more important blocks for the run game. Whereas in a gap scheme, the center's block, when you're running power or counter, there are three significant blocks on those plays, and there are two insignificant blocks. One is the tackle away from the ball, and the other one's the center. The center usually has a guy that he's blocking where he has an angle on him, and you just don't lose. You just don't lose the block, and you're fine. You don't have to get movement. You actually don't have to do a whole lot in basic terms. So that is the Ravens scheme. So if they want to continue running power and counter, you just kind of need a center to stand in the way of a big nose tackle. But as the point I've made is that they can expand the run game now, use Tyler Linderbaum as a weapon, do pin and pull stuff, get him out, lead him. He could be a pulling lead blocker for Lamar Jackson. Now you have an expanded run game package. Nobody runs the ball more than the Ravens. I think they're going to expand their run scheme and treat Linderbaum like a playmaker, not just another center.
And you are talking as a keynote speaker at the Cool Clinic.
I am a keynote speaker at the Cool Clinic. There's the offensive line clinic.
You're on the
five-time. I'm on the plaque.
The picture and everything.
I got the NFL bag with my name on it and everything. I'm an offensive line
expert. You're an authority.
Expert. It's just me, Joe Thomas.
You, Joe Thomas, and Duke. And Bob Wiley.
Bill Callahan, Bob Wiley. Like, we're Dante Scarnecchia.
All cut from the same cloth.
I spoke just before Dante Scarnecchia last year over Zoom. Perfect. So I'm speaking from a position of, I don't see Duke over there at the cool club. Did Duke get invited?
I don't know.
Where's OL Masterminds over there?
Maybe he did. The cool maybe he turned him down.
He probably did. Yeah. I like Duke. Jeff Schwartz isn't over there.
Also true.
I don't see the other O-line Twitter folks over there, except maybe Mitchell. Mitchell been there before? I don't know. Five-time keynote speaker at the cool clinic. May have added a year or two.
Keynote.
Anyway, I think really liked the Ravens draft. Did we cover everything? I like Jalen Armour-Davis in the fourth round, too.
Yeah.
And they got two tight ends in the fourth round.
Right.
They love tight ends. They use tight ends. Charlie Kohler and Isaiah Likely could actually contribute.
And they might need to use them more now because they don't have Marquise Brown.
They don't have Marquise Brown. They got to figure out wide receiver one, or speed wide receiver maybe, opposite Rashad Bateman.
Yeah. And remember, like, they have Bateman, you know, first rounder from a year ago, didn't have the best rookie season in part because of injuries and stuff. They'll be expecting a significant jump from him.
Only three teams left.
Sweet.
Who's next? Browns. Or is it Bengals? I lost my Bengals first. Cincinnati Bengals. Mm-hmm. Bengals?
Bengals.
So we had some healthy debates on this. By the way, the Ravens, we mentioned, they finished number one in the consensus. Where are the Bengals in this consensus? Somewhere
in the middle.
Feels like the middle, yeah. 19th. PFF gives them a B+.
A little harsh.
Finished 19th with 2.7 GPA. Would Thor have them? F-? Hit them with a D.
Yeah.
Okay. Not a Dax Hill fan, I assume. So the Bengals go with a couple players in the secondary to start off. Trevor on the main show was theorizing with Dax Hill as the first pick, and then corner with the second pick, Cam Taylor-Britt. Does that mean they're out with Jesse Bates?
I think, yeah. I don't know if it means automatically he's out, but I do think it's contingency if that is the case. The Bengals have had a while now where they've been treating the Jesse Bates thing as, let's just wait and see, you know?
Yeah.
I understand you want to get paid, and you know, you've earned it, you've done a great job, but we're just going to wait a little while longer, you know? And if you can back it up again, okay. And he didn't really back it up again.
Our season grade didn't love him, but he was fantastic on that Super Bowl.
Agreed. But, you know, the Bengals now for a while have had this approach of, you know, what Jesse Bates has done is great. It's not quite where we're willing to go in terms of whatever contract he wants. So as long as that's their attitude of sort of, let's keep kicking this down the road, let's hedge a little bit more. This is just another hedge. And what's amazing to me is how quickly the Bengals roster has gone from, wow, this is not a good team, they need a lot of work, and oh, Joe Burrow is now working miracles to drag this team somewhere they didn't belong, to all of a sudden, they fill all these holes in free agency, and now you're looking at them and saying, they can draft a guy like Daxton Hill in the first round, and nobody have any idea where he plays, and it not be a bad pick. You know? Because the roster all of a sudden is in actually pretty damn good shape. So Daxton Hill is this intriguing player who played primarily slot corner at Michigan. Most people, I think, are projecting him to a safety at the next level. There have been talks about maybe they could move him to outside corner because he has that kind of skill set. And that, in theory, on paper, is where the Bengals' biggest need is, you know, replacing Eli Apple. All of those things are plausible. And almost regardless of what it is, it's a good move because he's just a good defensive back. And by and large, that is where your biggest weakness is. So I like the pick.
I definitely looked. I try not to over. I do overlook into like themes in the draft, and sometimes it really is as simple as what everyone says. Ah, we just trusted our board, and maybe they did. And the board sometimes falls with corner safety, or whatever it might be. I do think the Bengals didn't necessarily directly attack needs. I think you could. I mean, you look at corner; it's definitely a need in that. Eli Apple's back on a one-year deal, and he's got like a seven-game stretch of decent play over the last few years. It's not like corner is locked in on that spot opposite Chidobe Awuzie. So adding Cam Taylor-Britt is nice, right, to have him opposite or as a backup to Eli Apple, maybe eventually a successor. But I think the flexibility and the versatility that they're looking for in the secondary fits their scheme. Remember how they adjusted their system, adjusted their coverages, everything that they did against the Chiefs. We always talk about the Patriots as this week-to-week game plan team. The Bengals have done far more of that in recent years. Who better than Dax Hill, who can literally play slot corner, play man-to-man, play zone, play safety to fulfill that?
And that's why even if your plan is that Daxton Hill is a slot corner, you would look at that and you say, well, we have Mike Hilton already. Why do we need a Daxton Hill? They are very different types of slot corners.
and they're not incompatible in the same team, right? So even if you keep
I
both,
completely agree.
Like even if you just say Daxton Hill is a slot corner for us, he's a very different slot than Mike Hilton, and that gives us the ability to change up week to week the way the Patriots did. Remember, they would go, they would change whether they're a man-heavy coverage team this week or a zone-heavy coverage team this week, and they would change the starting corner based on that. The Bengals now have the flexibility to do that, even if, in theory, you're doubling up at a position that you already have. Like, that's the type of defense they're playing, and it's why I think both those picks are fine. They're decent.
This also, you're complimenting the Bengals roster because we complimented what they did in free agency, right? When we were first mock drafting back in February, it's like, okay, how many linemen are they going to draft?
Right.
Late first round, you got to get Zion Johnson. Second round, who's the best tackle that's going to come back there that you can play right tackle? The fact that they brought in Lyle Collins, Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, fill the needs in free agency, we love this. You know, we love the way this works. So had Tyler Linderbaum fallen? Sure. Maybe take Linderbaum at center and you move Karras to guard. Again, I think the flexibility of Karras playing guard and center is huge. Flexibility of Daxton Hill. I think they're I just like a lot of what the Bengals are doing from a team-building standpoint here.
Yeah. And, I just think it's amazing how quickly they've gone from, like, they need to attack needs pretty hard to they really could have gone a number of different directions and it would have been good.
Now, I think where their grade gets lower, Cam Taylor-Britt went off the board about where we said he would. His grades were okay, but they kept getting better. He's athletic. Some of his best plays are bad plays. Just saying. Some of his best plays show off his athleticism, but he's not always in position, we'll say, with Taylor-Britt. He's making some nice plays in zone, though, too, when we talk about what the Bengals want to do. Moving backwards, making plays over his head. So those are the first two picks. They went secondary. Zachary Carter, big reach on our board. He was at 203 overall. They took him at 95, so he was a lot lower. He's not a great pass rusher. He's had moments as a run defender. So you're adding him into just this eight deep of defensive linemen, where I don't even know if he sees the field a whole lot. He can play on the interior a little bit, but you know, beyond that, Tyson Anderson, big. Not a complete movable chess piece, but kind of that another hybrid safety slot type of player. So the hybrid players are what the Bengals are going for, whether it's on the defensive line, in the secondary, on the offensive line. Versatility getting better and better in Cincinnati. So I think it was a solid draft, but yeah. I think I'm most excited about the Bengals roster because of what they did in free agency, which opened them up to be flexible here.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the second straight year, they've had an almost perfect offseason top to bottom. Like, they have done an amazing job of turning this thing around in a hurry, catalyzed by being the number one overall pick, getting Joe Burrow, essentially.
I'll say the second round picks have been a little, that's where they've been kind of hit or miss. Jackson Carmen last year, we'll see what comes from him. Right. Taylor-Britt has that same type of boom or bust ability. Drew Sample a few years ago. But I think Daxton Hill is going to be a nice addition in the first round here. Good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go Cleveland Browns.
The Bruins.
Where did the Browns rank in this whole thing? Of course, the Browns didn't have a first-round pick, so they're going to finish tied for 21st.
Or a second, right?
They did have a second, I believe.
Not by the time they picked.
They traded. Yeah. They traded a ton, right? Initially, it didn't happen. But they ended up with a B, which is pretty good for a team that didn't pick high, so people liked what the Browns did. Any initial thoughts on the Browns draft? Their first pick wasn't until 68, right? Early third round. It was Martin Emerson, cornerback out of Mississippi State.
Yeah. It's another solid draft. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I really liked Alex Wright. They grabbed him in the third round.
That's Wunderkind.
Edge rusher from UAB. Had some insane PFF grades. 90.4 grade at UAB. She has some real legit reps on his tape and has them against good competition as well. Like, he obviously didn't necessarily face the biggest gauntlet of pass blockers, but when he did, he had some serious reps against those guys. Has the sort of size and power to be a player at the next level. Doesn't have the complete athletic profile that you would love to see, but has some juice in certain areas. So to get him in the third round, that's the perfect type of Jadeveon Clowney replacement, right? In fact, actually, they're not dissimilar players, both in terms of strengths and weaknesses. And Clowney, when he showed up, was a really nice compliment opposite Myles Garrett.
Second straight year, UAB has had a very productive, long edge defender. Last year was Jordan Smith, went in the fourth round, I believe, for the Jaguars. Alex Wright was more productive, but had a better offseason than Jordan Smith, who had a disastrous workout. didn't really do much as a rookie. But I think Wright, I like him a lot. It definitely has some ability. He goes at 78. He was 83 on our draft board, so that was similar to where we expected him. I liked Martin Emerson even probably a little higher than our draft board had him at 108. Long corner that can play off. I think you always talk about corners and college that have those ugly plays. He had some of those, right?
Yeah.
I think he's a good player.
I think he was very miscast in college. Like, he's a guy that will be going to a scheme that makes much more sense for him than the scheme he was at playing in college. And the Browns are on a pretty good recent run of selecting corners that are good, you know, that have been productive, that have played well within their system. So I didn't love Martin Emerson, but I do like him a lot more for this defense than the one he was playing at Mississippi State.
So now then the Browns went and traded a fifth rounder, Troy Hill, for a fifth rounder,
yes.
Right? I know you're a Troy Hill fan, and we liked that signing last year. But, you know, that's not a bad – I kind of like that. I mean, I like that a lot for the Rams.
Yeah.
I think this is why – so I think the analytically driven teams don't take picks beyond the fourth a ton. But when you have fifth, sixth rounders, and you trade them for established NFL players – even with the salary, I think that is great business. So good for the Rams. The Browns, full process there. You got a year out of Troy Hill. You paid him a little bit of money. You flipped him for a fifth. Not the best thing, but I think that was made possible because the Browns have invested so much in the secondary over the last couple of years. They just paid Denzel Ward. You drafted Greg Newsom in the first last year. Greedy Williams is still sticking around. You bring in Martin Emerson now. AJ Green there, the corner. They're really deep at corner, and I like just adding Emerson into that mix, especially if Greedy Williams ends up walking at the end of this year.
Yep. A big kind of a potential swing point of this draft is what David Bell ends up becoming.
Yep.
In the NFL. Wide receiver from Purdue. He was really productive in college, was really good in college, but had a terrible measurable profile. Like, the dude ran in the 4.7s. Like, he had the kind of workout numbers that are typically prohibitive in terms of success, right? Now, he's not...
Insert someone else's name and you're describing him to a T.
He's not a like-for-like replacement, but he is effectively replacing Jarvis Landry, who is the same. Jarvis Landry ran like a 4.75 or something. It's ridiculous, but has been successful at the NFL level. So he is stepping into the shoes vacated by a guy who bucked that trend and did exactly what David Bell needs to do in terms of overcoming those disadvantages. But Jarvis Landry is a massive outlier for success, given those numbers.
But maybe not in the slot.
No,
maybe,
and that's the thing. So they're very different. They're very different players, and it's not like Jarvis Landry does not supply the blueprint for David Bell to be successful despite those numbers. I'm just saying that, like, he's immediately stepping into the shoes of a guy who did what he's going to need to do in terms of overcoming running as slow as a hippo.
Slow as a hippo.
I actually think hippos are quite fast.
Faster than David Bell and Jarvis Landry. The fantasy people hated Jarvis Landry for years because the workout was so bad.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the football evaluation people hated Jarvis Landry because his ADOT was like 3.
Yes.
And then Josh Hermsmeyer loves him. Go figure.
Jarvis Landry's always been a very polarizing player.
Yeah. I think all of that was true, though. He had, like, inflated catch totals, but he also kind of did the best with what he was given.
Yes.
All of that was true. I can see David Bell having that. Maybe not as good after the catch.
David Bell, well, we're taking his best time, so including his pro day. No, let's get rid of that. Let's combine. 4.68. So it wasn't quite as terrible as Jarvis's.
This coming straight from Next Gen Stats here. Producer Tyler tells us, on average, hippos can hit speeds of 30 miles an hour. Which
I'm not interested in top speed. I want acceleration.
It might take a while to get there, but like, that's Tariq Woolen type speed. That's what Tariq Woolen.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fast. I need acceleration time. I'm sure David Bell, once he's going, can get it going on a high level.
That hippo speed's brought to you by Next Gen Stats. Thank you, Next Gen Stats. We put chips in the hippos.
Chips in the hippos.
In the shoulder pads of the hippos, so we can see how fast they're going. Perry and Winfrey, interior defensive lineman, fourth-round pick, really good penetrator. He's quick off the ball. He's going to get, like a lot of guys, just absolutely wrecked at the point of attack sometimes. But Winfrey and Alex Wright, a couple important players in this draft because the Browns had no depth along the defensive line. So when you talk about you just discovered something.
Yeah. Well, I'm fact checking Tyler live on the
when
air.
When you it's a next gen stat. It is correct. When you talk about filling needs still at some point, I think the Browns might be looking at that 12th wave of defensive linemen and might have more depth to add there. But they had to get younger. Alex Wright, Perry, and Winfrey. Decent plays in the third and fourth round.
So, hippos apparently are known to have a speed of 30 kilometers an hour, not miles an hour.
Oh.
That's a major difference.
For perspective, I can throw, or used to be able to throw, 150 kilometers per hour.
Right. Well, that's 19 miles an hour, which is like pretty quick person.
Yeah, that's it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the open field, I would say. Jonathan Taylor is probably a 21-mile-an-hour
right.
guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the open field is probably a 19.
Now, look, there are different numbers out here. This is not a – this doesn't appear to be a an accepted consensus scientific number. There appears to be a range available. And nobody is giving me a an acceleration time, which is what I'm really after.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for you to look.
I'm looking. I got nothing.
Then Isaiah Thomas, two from Oklahoma, all Oklahoma players for the rest of the draft. Jerome Ford to add to that deep backfield. Oh, they drafted a running back in the fifth round.
It is fascinating.
Kill their grade.
What Googling how fast can a hippo accelerate will get you, because people also ask, what's faster, Usain Bolt or a hippo? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I'd love to see it.
Bolt is definitely faster.
It depends.
If NFL players are running 23 miles an hour.
No, because if the hippo can run 30 kilometers, then it's Bolt.
10?
If he can run 30 miles, it's the hippo.
Oh, okay. All right. Are we done with the Browns?
Are hippos faster than cars?
Just common questions. Good job by the Browns accumulating draft picks. By the way, I think that's a key part of the Browns analysis here. You'll hear me all the time. If you're going to give up all of those draft picks for first and second rounders and all that stuff, whether it's for a quarterback, receiver, whatever it is, you have to not let other parts of your roster fall apart. You do that through volume drafting, trading down, and doing what the Browns did right
but,
there.
So this is just a brief little case study of what's wrong with the world right now, right? Remember when we said earlier that people need to critically think and evaluate the source and think for themselves generally?
Are you calling up Tyler?
No, Tyler's fine. I'm just from this Google thing, right? I'm now down a rabbit hole of hippo information. So
30 miles an hour.
Wildanimalcentral.com is who I'm calling out right now. Under the title, are hippos faster than cars? Which is a reasonable question, right? In a short burst of speed, hippos can reach 25 miles an hour. So they're splitting the difference. That seems like a reasonable, but that seems fair, right? We've had 20 miles an hour. We've had 30 miles an hour. Split the difference. They can hit 25 miles an hour. Then they put in brackets, that's faster than most cars. What? No, it isn't. What kind of car can only go 25 miles an hour? That's bullshit.
My minivan.
Your minivan.
The Honda Odyssey.
Your minivan in reverse could do more than 25 miles an hour.
I think they meant golf cart.
So this is the thing, right? The people out there are Googling whatever the hell they want to Google, and then they're reading this information from wildanimalcentral.com.
And they're like, hippos are faster than cars.
Or wherever their source of information is, and they're taking that as new knowledge, right? I have now learned a new fact. Hippos are faster than cars based off this Googleable thing. That's how the world gets broken now. Because people just read crap on the internet and decide it's fact.
Alligators run 20 miles an hour, according to the screenshot. Is that true? That's pretty fast. Stay away from alligators, man.
That's why you're supposed to zigzag.
Oh, yeah, they can't.
Can't turn.
They're
really good in a straight line, but they're no three-cone.
Can we get their relative athletic score, please?
I mean, look, it's well-known. Alligators, they got good 40 times. They got a crappy three-cone, so you got to zigzag.
Three-cone's like 15. Let's get the alligators on the RAS here. Zigzag, you'll be fine. Where are we now?
I don't know. We talk a lot about animals for an NFL podcast.
Well, sometimes it goes off the rails here.
Did we cover the Browns?
I think so.
We done?
Browns pretty well covered.
Drafted a kicker. It's always good.
Good job, Browns. Let's go to the Steelers. You won't have any takes here.
Oh, wow.
Are you conflicted as a Steelers hater?
Somebody was thinking.
Two of your favorite receivers and then Kenny
I
Pickett.
Must have muted most of Pittsburgh at this point on Twitter, and there are still people that make their way to my mentions banging on about how we always hate the Steelers. Like, I got tagged in some random post that the PFF main account did where it was like, who's the best wide receiver fit? They're like, where's George Pickens? Sam, at PFF Sam, what's the problem? I'm just sitting here. I had nothing to do with that.
somebody else's department. Just the guy sitting in the chair.
I throw social media under the bus all the time now. Oh, you posted another didn't give up a sack stat. Okay, yeah. That's
okay. Good.
Hope it goes viral.
All right, let's talk Steelers.
Steelers. We got Kenny Pickett and George Pickens. Pickett to Pickens. Get Calvin Austin a little bit later.
I was going to tweet it earlier because it's really funny, but then I realized that people think we hate the Steelers. I don't want that smoke anymore. It was like a giant AirPod, you know? It must have been like a foot and a half long. So, giant AirPod guy holding it. It was like, this is Kenny Pickett holding an Apple AirPod. It was really funny. Tyler, have you got that photo? Are you able to put that in Studio B? Are you able to fire that on the screen? Because that was freaking hilarious.
There's no way we can get stuff on screen.
Probably not.
Studio
look,
B here.
I Google it.
We're going head-to-head with Tailgate right now. Are we losing? Oh, no, we're losing viewers.
We're hemorrhaging viewers. Anyway, I'm just saying that was a funny thing. Kenny Pickett and his tiny hands is now in Pittsburgh. 20th overall pick, the only quarterback in the first round, the only QB before the third round. I am really intrigued by how far.
Just walk through, Harry. It's fine. You don't have to crawl.
Truth. There you go.
That's how we do it.
I'm really interested in how far Kenny Pickett would have slipped in the draft if they hadn't taken him in the first round. Now, look, it's a moot point. It's a thought exercise. Who cares? They got their guy. And now we're going to get to – I don't think he needs to start right away as well, which is good for him because they have Trubisky.
Remind me next year when I'm inhaling all the smoke. Like the smoke's coming. It's Combine. It's the Senior Bowl. And I'm just like straight to my lungs, inhaling it all. Kenny Pickett, Panthers love him, right? Inhaled all that.
Mm-hmm.
Malik Willis, the Steelers, it's their guy. They love Malik Willis. They're going to do everything they can to get Malik Willis. Obviously, both wrong. Panthers – didn't get Kenny Pickett.
They were at his pro day.
And the Steelers took Pickett over Malik Willis.
Yeah.
So remind me next year. I'm not buying anything.
Yeah.
I think what teams do is they every other year. Kenny Pickett's hands. Huh?
Kenny Pickett holding an AirPod.
That's good. That's a good joke.
Right?
He's got small hands.
Yeah.
AirPods. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
His little hands.
I mean, look, I don't make the rules, but that's funny.
You got to check it out on YouTube, of course, if you're listening in podcast land. So remind me next year. I'm not buying into it. I do think teams do this every other year,
You
though.
Always buy into it. I know. Every year.
But every other year, because there was the one year like nobody knew the Jaguars were drafting Blake Bortles, but there was like some other year where everybody knew they were drafting Fournette. The next year, I think it was. So I think you rotate. So next year, buy into what the Steelers say. Because last year, everybody knew they wanted Najee Harris.
Okay.
And they used that against everybody this year by playing it up like they wanted Malik Willis.
I didn't realize until seeing Peter King's article that the Steelers and Pitt University, they share like a facility, like an indoor facility. The workout room, the meeting room, all this kind of stuff. It's the same building.
Well, I know that they both play in the same stadium.
Yeah. Literally the same building. So apparently the front door is just, you know, those his and hers doors. Right and left. So Pitt is on the right and the Steelers are on the left. The doors are 12 feet apart.
Oh, I just go to the Steelers side.
So they were like, Peter King was asking Kenny Pickett, it's like, what's going to be like, you know, just going in the left door now? Is that going to be weird?
That's what makes Peter Peter.
All right. Man's got a photo of the facility. Yeah.
Peter asks the right questions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he knows.
So he was saying that he got to know, I think, Mike Tomlin a little bit from his years at Pitt. Apparently it was like, I basically never talked to Ben Roethlisberger. Like the two quarterbacks, they're literally in the same building. The door is 12 feet apart. It's like never spoke to the man.
Why would he?
Why? They're both QBs of like the same city. You know, you're in the same building. No. Nothing?
Ben doesn't even talk to Mason Rudolph. Why is he going to talk to Kenny Pickett?
That's the thing. He's another Ryan Tannehill, I'm not here to mentor kind of guy.
Yeah, the dude's just trying to like walk. Could barely even stand up the last couple of years.
I mean, look,
trying to throw a ball without his arm falling off. He's got enough to worry about.
I was just surprised by that.
Anyway, a lot to like about the Steelers here. In our strategy, that was a good stutter. In our strategy of flooding the field with awesome players.
Can you talk anymore? Are you done?
I'm almost at our time limit here. Flooding the field with awesome playmakers. Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, already there. You add in George Pickens. You add in Calvin Austin III.
Yes.
I do wonder... I mean, on paper, like, give me that all day, right?
Yeah.
But I do wonder, have they soured on Chase Claypool at all? Did he announce the pick, by the way? Did he announce the George Pickens pick or something?
Claypool?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I made the comment that the Packers or somebody should call about Chase Claypool and his availability. And somebody's like, oh, Chase Claypool announced the pick. Of course he's not going to, like, whatever. Because we don't watch the draft. Like, we're working, so I don't watch ESPN or NFL Network.
We are the draft.
We're the draft. You watch us. I don't watch them.
You watch us. I don't watch
something
you.
Like that. I do wonder, is Claypool out, right? I mean, him and Mike Tomlin are arguing about practice and stuff. I'm the coach. You're the player. All this stuff. Is Claypool out? He's been so inconsistent. His high end is good. Claypool's been so inconsistent. Does this signal perhaps pushing him out a little
for bit? A team that has an amazing track record of drafting wide receivers and developing them and them being good, they do seem to have a weird track record of picking guys that they call – there's tension between the receiver and the coach, right? Antonio Brown. Now, look, they worked miracles for keeping Antonio Brown.
It took like 8 years.
That's what I'm saying. They worked miracles keeping that dude on the straight and narrow for like 6-7 years before he finally imploded and went off. Juju, you know, with the dancing and how much is the Chase Claypool arguing about practice and music. And then now, did you see the video of George Pickens getting drafted?
No, I did not. I don't think.
It's a little bit weird.
Okay.
He's just, you know, he's watching himself get drafted. It's not the usual video of a guy watching himself get drafted. I'll say that.
What did he do?
Nothing really. It's difficult to explain that video without seeing it. But
either way, we knew that George Pickens might be a risk only because I'm inhaling the smoke of the rumors that he might be.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, there were some off-field concerns.
Somebody tweeted in response to that video that he's either going to be like kicked off the team within half a season or an all-pro, like nothing in between. Like that.
That's what we said. That was the Corey Coleman.
Yeah. Look, I love George Pickens' skill set. I think he has legitimate number one wide receiver potential for an offense that could use that, right? Chase Claypool is not that within this offense. Deontay Johnson is a really good receiver. Again, not quite that true alpha skill set. I think that's a fantastic pick in the second round, given the receivers that have already gone off the board. I understand there are reasons that he's fallen, but that's perfect value at that point. Coming back in the fourth round, getting Calvin Austin, apparently gazumping Baltimore for him as well, getting him one pick before the Ravens wanted him. Great. Those are two of my favorite receivers in this draft, and they both wound up on the same team. And now they have potentially Kenny Pickett throwing it to them.
So Matt Canada, too, loves, I mean, Mr. Jet Sweep, loves doing that. Do you like Calvin Austin in that role? I know you think he could be more.
Yes.
Do you think they see Austin as that? If he's wide receiver 4 and a satellite player, get him in space, I could absolutely see that thought process.
I mean, look, I think he can do that fine. He'll be great at that. My only concern is I hope they don't think that's all he is, right? That would be disappointing if they're like, oh, we've got our Tavon Austin jet sweep guy. Because I've heard other people say they went to Calvin Austin's tape and they expected to see this like gimmick slot receiver, and all of a sudden they see these like true number one X receiver. Just he's 5'7" and 170 pounds. Like, it's weird. But that's what he is. So don't just assume he can't be that anymore at the next level.
Do you think Kenny Pickett starts right away?
No.
So I was intrigued to see Mitch Trubisky. Mitchell, even. He should go back to Mitch. He'd ball out. But Trubisky, is this his best supporting cast? This is knowing that we have an offensive line that, because Big Ben got rid of the ball in about 2.2 seconds, they pass blocked okay. Like, they didn't give up a high pressure rate, but anytime they did have to pass protect, it wasn't great. Beyond that. But this group of playmakers, you add in Pat Freiermuth at tight end, solid. This might be Trubisky's best supporting cast. It's at least his best supporting cast since 2018, when I don't think he elevated the Bears, but the Bears elevated him and his play to a division championship. It might be the best group for Trubisky throwing the ball. And you don't think Pickett plays right away?
No.
What should they do here?
I think they should start Trubisky, and I think they will start Trubisky.
You know my line.
When he's ready.
Whatever's best.
Yeah. I mean, look, they...
Whatever's best for Kenny Pickett's development.
Life is just a continual circle, right? It keeps coming back on itself. Mike Glennon was QB1 for a few weeks until they drafted Mitchell Trubisky. Mike Glennon got 4 games, then Trubisky came in.
Yeah, because they thought Trubisky was ready. That's the way you do it.
I think that's a similar timeline. It's always partly driven by when the quarterback's ready. It's also always partly driven by just how bad is this guy you got starting, right? Blake Bortles was supposed to sit his entire rookie season, but who was it? Chad Henne was such a train wreck
that we had to take Bortles and throw him in there after a few weeks because this is awful. So I suspect you're going to get 4 or 5 weeks of Trubisky, and then when Trubisky plays his way to the bench, Kenny Pickett goes out.
The other number here that just to discuss Pickett a little bit here, we harped on a lot that time to throw number, the fact that he was over 3 seconds every single year of his career at almost 3.2 last year. Also charged with 34 pressures, right? That we blamed him for the pressure, either holding on the ball too long, leaving a clean pocket, stepping into pressure that wasn't actually there. We blame the quarterback. That is the complete opposite of what Big Ben was here last year. So say what you want about Big Ben and his the anemic offense that they had at various points last year. But Big Ben got rid of the ball quickly, wasn't running into pressure, wasn't taking unnecessary sacks. But when there were bad blocks in front of him, he was going down to the ground.
Kenny
Pickett can't play like that behind this offensive line because it's just not that good.
Yeah.
Even though they've made some additions. James Daniels was a nice moving in the right direction, but it's not a great pass protecting offensive line right now.
Big Ben and Kenny Pickett represent two ends of the spectrum, right? Ben is like, stand back, 2 seconds, fire it out of there. Not going to move anymore because I can't. I'm a statue. Yeah. That's how I'm playing. Kenny Pickett is, I'm going to hold the ball for a freaking ice age, and when I move, I'm going to run. And I'm rarely passing when I'm on the run. I'm going to drop my eyes and just try and get the hell out of here to open space. Like, that is literally two opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got Ben Roethlisberger getting rid of the ball, the fastest in the NFL. If Pickett plays the same way in the NFL that he was playing at Pitt, he will be the slowest average time to throw in the league. And he will be doing it in a non-helpful way. Trubisky is closer to the Kenny Pickett end of the spectrum. So both players are going to be stressing that offensive line a lot more than it was stressed last year, certainly, with Roethlisberger. And for that reason, I don't like Pickett as a day one starter. And I think it would be wise for the Steelers to at least explore how big of a problem that's going to be with Trubisky before they do
see that first.
Yeah. Like, you should know at this point that the offensive line will look worse with one of those two quarterbacks. You're not going to know how much worse until the live bullets start flying. So if the live bullets are flying, let's throw out Trubisky as the sacrificial lamb and let's find out how bad this is. And then once you get a baseline, now you can start to work with Kenny Pickett and figure out what that needs to look like.
The Steelers clearly feel good enough about their offensive line at this point. Okorafor at right tackle, they brought him back. Dan Moore, last year's mid-rounder, who had a below-average season. They're banking on second-year improvement, I assume, there. Kevin Dotson's been solid during his career, and they bring in Mason Cole and James Daniels. Both guys, solid. Like, they're average to above-average players historically. My biggest questions, though, are at tackle as far as the pass protection goes. So it could be okay on the offensive line. I'm really intrigued by this group of pass catchers, though.
I really like the George Pickens pick. I really like the Calvin Austin pick. I really like the DeMarvin Leal pick in the third round as well.
I think he's good for the Steelers because he is such a tweener.
Yeah. And a year ago, this was a guy who was expected to go in the first round and have top, you know, maybe top 10 kind of potential and talent.
Right.
Now, look, I'm not saying he should have gone there. Like, he had a bad year. Like,
right.
He's not coming off a good season. But in the third round, isn't that like, well, let's find out if he still has first-round talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
isn't
absolutely.
That exactly where you draft a guy like that? There are many reasons between workout numbers weren't great, tweener, didn't come off a good year, all these things. Like, it's legitimate that he slipped to the third round. But it's also kind of legitimate that people were expecting him to be a first-rounder. So at the very minimum, I think it's reasonable to say that the ceiling is higher than a third-rounder. So it's kind of like Baltimore stopping the slide of a guy like Ajabo, or, you know, taking a gamble on a guy like Faalele. Like, that's where you should do that. So that run of three picks, the second, third, and fourth round for the Steelers, I think is a really good run of selections.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's going to come down to Pickett, of course, this entire draft, first round, just like, hey, they took Najee first round last year. I think the Steelers pick good players overall, but a lot of it comes down to their first round decisions through the years, whether it's Terrell Edmonds, whether it's Najee Harris, whether it's Kenny Pickett, and Devin Bush, you know, they just didn't pick up his fifth-year option. There are some poor first-round decisions. Yes, Najee Harris was still not a good first-round pick, even though he is a fantastic running back and one of the most valuable running backs in the NFL last year. Still not a good first-round pick, but that's been the difference, I think, for the Steelers. They've been good in the other rounds.
There's no way of knowing this, and it's kind of irrelevant, except that it impacts how you would grade this draft. But if Pittsburgh doesn't grab Pickett at 20, do you think he makes it through to their second-round pick at 52?
I do. Knowing what I know about the other quarterbacks,
that's what I mean,
right? It's not like we had Pickett in the first, Ridder in the second, Corral in the third. I mean, it was just.
But we also know, But we also know that you know this. It's like that Patriots selection again. It's like we also know that there were.
It takes one team. I know
there were very different views of this draft class as well, right? Some people had. I think there were people that had Sam Howell as the number one quarterback on the board somehow, despite the fact that he slipped to the fifth round. There were definitely people.
I mean, all that's doable. He just might have been your 50th player on the board.
There are also, like, I know NFL people that were like, okay, this QB class stinks. The only guy that has a chance is Kenny Pickett. Now, I didn't agree with that, but that's what some people thought. So there is a world, is what I'm saying, where somebody thought that Kenny Pickett was two rounds better than the rest of the draft class.
That's what's tough about using the actual picks as defining what the NFL thinks, right? Like, Tim Tebow was a first-round player. Because the Broncos decided that he was, when I don't think any other team probably believed it. I mean, he was a third-round quarterback, probably, at best.
But one team.
One team picked him in the first round. I thought E.J. Manuel was a second-round quarterback. Christian Ponder, a second-round quarterback that happened to go in the first. That could be true about Kenny Pickett. I don't know. We'll see. But
my hunch is, given the rest of this draft class, and given that, to me, he didn't differentiate himself from the rest of this draft class, I suspect Kenny Pickett lasts to 52 if the Steelers go in a different direction in the first round. So for me, I ding them a little bit in terms of missing out on value by not waiting. And even though I love rounds 2, 3, 4, that puts a cap on what I think of this draft class, and I gave it a B.
Nice. Where did everybody have the Steelers here?
B+, I think, is our official one.
The consensus has the Steelers. They middle of the pack here, too?
Yeah, they will be. Oh, no, 10.
10th. Oh, I was looking too low. PFF has a B+. Steelers have them. GPA's got them 10th. Seahawks are pretty high at 9, huh? In the consensus. The other thing to consider, if they didn't pick Pickett, the Panthers are out of the mix. Panthers had already. Here's the thing, right?
Everyone had already passed on quarterback.
Everyone had already passed on him. But then the most desperate teams, the Falcons.
Also passed on them in the second.
And the Steelers twice. Yeah. I mean, the Seahawks twice.
Right. The Falcons would have.
But I'm saying, if you're saying, we're not going to take Pickett here at 20, let's see what happens in the second round.
Yeah.
You're worried about the Falcons on the turn and the Seahawks twice on the turn.
And Atlanta.
The Falcons. Yeah, I said Falcons and the two Seahawks. No Panthers.
Right, no Panthers.
But there's three specific picks that you're probably worried about, so you had to do it in the first. And I get it. I mean, you're usually of the mind like, yeah, if you like the guy, go get him. That's fine.
I think so. It's literally just with the hindsight of having seen what happened to the rest of that quarterback class.
That would have been interesting.
Could they have got a round extra?
There might not have been a quarterback until 52.
Which would have been wild, by
and
the
way. Then Ridder at 80-something, whatever, 83 or whatever
74.
He was. 74. Ridder, sorry.
But my only point with that is, so if they waited, they didn't go QB. All of a sudden now, you start to bring in guys like Trent McDuffie's in play. You know, Kyrie Elam, the offensive lineman, Jermaine Johnson.
But you don't have George Pickens.
No, agreed. But you know, Devontae Wyatt. But even at that point, like, there were better wide receivers on the board at that stage. Now, not that many because we'd already had the run, but Christian Watson would have been available. Sky Moore. Like, there are receivers.
We'd rather have Pickens anyway, though.
Agreed. I'm just saying that. You know, you're bringing in a lot more players into play if you took that gamble. And
yeah, for sure.
You're proved right.
Well, I think we're going to see Pickett sooner rather than later. I think the scenario you paint as far as Trubisky for a few games, and we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested to see Trubisky with these playmakers to see if they figure something out. Fascinated to see George Pickens if they can keep him straight, you know, because he could be the steal of the draft at 52.
Only you could go through Mitchell Trubisky's career so far. And be like,
I want a little more Trubisky.
I'm really excited for Trubisky.
I want a little more Trubisky. I want a little bit more. Matt Nagy's to blame for everything.
Oh, okay.
I mean, everything in the world is Matt Nagy's fault. Hmm. Bears draft right now, Matt Nagy's fault. Bears don't believe in Justin Fields, Matt Nagy's fault. It's all Nagy's fault. It's like Gase. It's all Gase's fault, the Jets. Not this draft. It's a good draft by the Jets. Gase's fault, though.
As is clearly demonstrated by Sam Darnold's success since he's been liberated from Adam Gase.
It's all Gase's fault. Trubisky intrigued me enough in one preseason game with the Bills with Brian Daboll.
Yeah.
That maybe I want to see him with the Steelers. What if he pulls a Jimmy Garoppolo? Keeps picking on the bench the whole year.
Yeah.
Think that could happen?
No.
Probably not. Anyway, let us know. What do you think of the draft? By the way, 25% off. Use the promo code NFLPOD. It's live still. 25% off any PFF subscription to get all the good stuff. Grades, stats, fantasy rankings are coming out soon. They're the best in the business. Projections, the whole thing. The whole thing. All your betting, gambling stuff. I can't put words together, but it doesn't matter. NFLPOD, 25%. Use it right now. 365 days of access.
Mm-hmm.
Sound good?
Yep.
All right. That's our bonus show. We're halfway through our draft reviews. We're going to hit up the couple NFC teams next tomorrow.
Nice.
NFC South and West.
Good tease.
We'll finish tomorrow. I got some messages from AFC East fans that felt slighted. They're used to being first at everything.
Okay.
And they were just all upset that they had to wait till today.
All right.
Second. So NFC other teams tomorrow, AFC other teams on Thursday, and then the offseason begins. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow. Go check out Tailgate in the other room. You guys can leave now. Go check out Tailgate.